When you walk into a brand new, like, state-of-the-art skyscraper, you just assume the foundation is solid rock.
Oh, absolutely. You don't really question the concrete.
Right. You're looking at the smart elevators, the keyless entry, and you're just assuming the ground beneath it all is completely solved.
Yeah, it's comforting to think that way. We really like to believe that the foundational layers of our world are immovable.
Right, that the basic structural stuff was figured out decades ago.
Exactly. But, that's a pretty dangerous assumption.
I mean, what happens when that concrete poured a decade and a half ago actually has a microscopic flaw?
A structural blind spot.
Yeah, a blind spot that, under the exact right pressure, could compromise the entire building. And that is exactly what we are exploring in today's deep dive.
It's a heavy topic today.
It really is. We've been poring over the July 8th, 2026 edition of the Tech and Morning newsletter. That's the cybersecurity and digital economy one.
And frankly, the fragility of our digital ecosystem right now is just staggering.
Staggering is the right word. So, our mission for you today is to look at how hidden vulnerabilities, plus some terrifying new AI capabilities, are completely rewriting the rules of digital safety for the everyday user.
And the digital economy, too. The underlying theme that just keeps emerging from these sources is the sheer weight of complexity.
Yeah, complex.
Like, as our digital tools become more sophisticated, the blind spots they create become exponentially larger.
Because we're building these incredible world-changing applications.
Right, but we're building them on systems that are so dense, so wildly layered, that no single human mind can fully comprehend all the moving parts anymore.
And that complexity is basically where the danger lives.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this with our first story because it is the ultimate example of a foundational blind spot. The newsletter covers a vulnerability dubbed JannySkate.
Tracked as CVE 2026-53359 for those keeping score.
Right, discovered by security researcher Hunwoo Kim at V4 Bell on social media just a day before the newsletter dropped.
So on July 7th.
Yeah, and this is a critical bug in the Linux kernel, specifically within the KVM, which is the kernel-based virtual machine layer.
Right.
But here is the part I am really struggling to wrap my head around. This bug has been sitting there completely undetected for 16 years.
Since roughly 2008.
I mean, come on. Open source code is audited by thousands of people. How does something sit there for a decade and a half without a single engineer noticing?
It sounds impossible, doesn't it?
It really does.
16 years in open source code means that arguably the best engineers on the planet have stared right at this code and just scrolled past it.
Wow.
But to understand how it hid and why it's an absolute nightmare for cloud computing, we have to look at what a VM escape actually is.
Okay, the way I've always pictured a VM escape is going back to that skyscraper analogy we used earlier.
I like that analogy.
Yeah, so imagine you are renting a highly secure apartment in a massive high rise. You have your own deadbolts, your own reinforced
You
walls.
feel completely isolated.
Right, safe from the other tenants. But one day, you discover there's a 16-year-old secret trapdoor hidden under your floorboards.
A trapdoor that shouldn't be there.
Exactly. And a malicious tenant in the apartment next to yours can use their trapdoor to crawl into the building's core maintenance shafts.
Which is terrifying.
Yeah, because once they are in those shafts, they suddenly have the master keys to every single apartment in the building. That is essentially what JannySkate allows a hacker to do on a shared cloud server.
That is spot on. And what's fascinating here is the exact technical mechanism of how that trapdoor gets triggered.
Okay, lay it on us.
In the cybersecurity world, we call this a use after free vulnerability. Think of it like returning a rental car.
Okay, a rental car.
You finish your trip, you hand the physical key fob back to the agency, and the agency marks the car as free for the next customer.
Standard procedure.
Right, but they completely fail to realize that you secretly paired your phone to the car's digital locking system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the system thinks your access is gone, but you can still walk right up and drive the car away.
Wait, so the system clears the official record but leaves a ghost access route open?
Precisely. In the Linux kernel, this happens during incredibly rapid transitions between different CPU processing states.
Like when it's switching gears.
Exactly. Specifically, when the system is shifting between long mode and protected mode, the system mistakenly reuses a page of memory.
Wait, pause for a second. Long mode, protected mode. You're losing me, and I'm sure some of the people listening are raising an eyebrow too. What do those modes actually mean for the server?
That's fair. Let me translate that. Processors have different operating modes depending on what kind of software they are running.
Okay.
Think of it like a car shifting gears, like you just said. Protected mode is an older 32-bit gear.
Got it.
Long mode is the modern 64-bit gear that lets the processor access massive amounts of memory.
Okay, so it's shifting between an old gear and a new gear.
Right. And when a virtual machine shifts gears between these two modes, the host server has to quickly manage the memory handoff. GenuScape exploits a flaw during that exact split-second gear shift.
So during the handoff, something gets dropped.
Exactly. The memory isn't properly wiped or freed. So an attacker can rewrite that ghost memory and jump from their isolated guest apartment directly into the host operating system's maintenance shaft.
That is wild. And what makes JanusGig uniquely terrifying, according to the source material, is its reach, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because usually these hardware-level bugs are isolated. Like, you build an exploit for an Intel chip, it doesn't work on an AMD chip.
Right, they usually have entirely different architectures.
But JanusScape works equally on both.
Because Hyunwoo Kim found the flaw not in the specific hardware, but in the universal translator they both rely on.
The KVM Shadow MMU.
Yeah, the memory management unit. This shadow MMU is responsible for translating virtual memory into physical memory for both architectures.
So since the flaw is in the shared translator, the hardware gap is bridged entirely.
Exactly. It is the first known guest-to-host exploit that hits both Intel and AMD simultaneously.
So for you listening right now, whether you're balancing your company's infrastructure or just running a personal side project, should you be panicking about your data in the cloud?
Well, fortunately, a patch was quietly rolled out in June 2026 before the vulnerability went public.
So the big guys are safe.
Yeah, the massive tech giants, AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, they have dedicated teams that patch these hypervisor layers immediately.
But what about the smaller guys?
That's the real danger zone. The thousands of smaller private hosting services or independent virtual private server providers.
The VPS providers.
Right. They don't always update their hypervisors aggressively. If you manage a server, verifying your kernel version against that June patch is your absolute top priority today.
Got it. So we've got ancient invisible flaws hiding in the basement of our servers.
Which is bad enough.
Right. But even if the basement is secure, the people walking through the front door are still leaving the building wide open.
Human error is always the wild card.
Yeah, the applications running on top of these servers aren't faring much better, even at the highest levels of academia.
Which brings us to the Proofpoint report, detailing a massive string of university hacks.
Yeah, we have a suspected China-aligned hacking group dubbed UNK Master Action, and they have breached over 15 major universities across North America.
A huge campaign.
But here's where it gets really interesting. They didn't just blanket the universities. They surgically targeted physics, astrophysics, and advanced engineering departments.
Very specific targets.
Right. Why go after physics professors? Are tenure-track astronomers just easier marks, or is there a bigger game being played here?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's classic high-stakes espionage.
Okay, how so?
These specific academic departments aren't just looking at distant stars or theorizing abstract math. They are the incubators for massive government grants.
Oh, right. Defense funding.
Exactly. They're deeply tied to sensitive military defense contracts, advanced particle physics research, and next-generation aerospace projects.
So the raw intellectual property sitting in like an unencrypted folder on a professor's laptop is worth billions.
Billions. And the way this group got in is a masterclass in modern intrusion.
Because they didn't burn some multi-million-dollar, never-before-seen zero-day exploit, right?
Not at all. They treated it like a heist, chaining together known vulnerabilities in open-source systems.
They didn't kick the door down, they just slipped past the bouncers.
That's a great way to put it. The initial entry was purely social engineering.
Phishing emails.
Yeah, highly specific, tailored phishing emails. They slipped past the university spam filters because these institutions had incredibly weak DMRC policies.
Meaning their email servers just blindly trusted that these spoofed emails were legitimately coming from internal university addresses.
Exactly. The domain looked real, the sender looked real, so it landed right in the primary inbox.
But the real damage happened when the professor clicked the link.
Right.
That link directed them to a page exploiting a known vulnerability in Roundcube Webmail.
Cracked as CVE 2024-4-2009.
And the newsletter notes this bug has a massive CVSS severity score of 9.3 because it triggers an XSS vulnerability.
Which is huge.
Hold on, 9.3 out of 10 and XSS. Put that in plain English for us. Why is this specific webmail bug so devastating?
Sure. XSS stands for cross-site scripting. In plain English, when the professor clicked the link, it silently injected a malicious, invisible script directly into their web browser.
So they didn't even know it happened.
Nope. And this script didn't need to trick the professor into typing out their password again. Instead, it just reached into the browser's memory and stole their active session token.
So it's like stealing the VIP wristband right off someone's arm after they've already shown their ID at the door.
That's exactly it. And they didn't stop at just reading emails.
Because once they had that VIP wristband, they triggered a secondary bug for remote code execution.
Yeah, which allowed them to install a tool called V-Shell.
V-Shell.
V-Shell is a highly sophisticated web shell. It acts as a permanent, invisible backdoor bolted onto the university's internal network.
Wow.
With V-Shell, the attackers have persistent remote access. They can execute system commands, quietly siphon off massive research files, and just monitor internal communications indefinitely.
So even if the university eventually detects the compromised email account and changes the professor's password,
it doesn't matter. The hackers are already inside the walls.
The takeaway for you listening here is just a stark reality check. Cybersecurity is no longer just installing antivirus software or, you know, mandating yearly training videos on not clicking weird links.
No, it's so much more than that now.
It is a grueling, exhausting battle of constantly monitoring open source supply chains while simultaneously defending against incredibly sophisticated psychological manipulation.
It perfectly illustrates how a chain is truly only as strong as its weakest link.
Right.
A poorly configured email policy combined with a slightly outdated open source webmail server was enough to completely bypass millions of dollars of perimeter security.
And compromise advanced national security research. So human error and outdated open source code are clearly still our biggest vulnerabilities.
For sure.
But surely, as we hand more of this complex architecture over to AI, those human blind spots start to disappear, right?
You would think so.
Yeah.
But introducing AI isn't removing the blind spots.
Oh.
No, it's introducing a completely different, frankly terrifying, class of vulnerabilities.
And we see that clearly in the SANS security discovery regarding the enterprise platform Writer AI.
Yes, they found a critical flaw dubbed Write Out.
So Writer AI operates on a multi-tenant architecture. Now, instead of a skyscraper or apartment analogy, let's think about this like a massive safety deposit vault in a bank.
Good visual.
Multiple companies, the tenants, rent boxes in the same physical vault to run their AI models. It makes the underlying computing costs cheaper for everyone.
Makes sense.
But your box is supposed to be impenetrable to the person renting the box next to you.
Right. But SANS security found that the metal walls between those boxes were practically made of paper. The sandbox isolation in Writer AI wasn't fully secure. An attacker could craft a malicious AI agent that, instead of performing a standard text generation task, just reached its hands through the walls.
And collected the active session tokens from the other corporate tenants in the vault?
Exactly.
So with one click, an attacker could leak those tokens and instantly gain access to highly confidential, proprietary data from entirely different companies sharing the same server space.
Now, we should definitely emphasize that Writer AI patched this immediately.
Right.
And there's zero evidence it was ever actively exploited in the wild. But as a proof of concept,
it's terrifying.
It is a blaring siren for the industry. As companies sprint to adopt AI, they're pooling their resources on shared infrastructure.
And if that tenant isolation fails, it's not just one company getting breached.
Exactly. It's an entire ecosystem collapsing at once.
But that's an example of AI security failing because of a structural bug. The next story from the newsletter is about when AI works exactly as intended, just flawlessly.
And honestly, I think that might be even scarier.
Yeah, seriously. So Vitalik Buterin, the co-founder of Ethereum, recently decided to run a little scientific challenge.
He wanted to contribute a highly technical idea to the network.
Right, Ethereum Improvement Proposal, EIP-7503. But he wanted to do it completely anonymously.
And he didn't just slap a pseudonym on a PDF.
Yeah.
He treated his own writing style like a radioactive fingerprint and tried to scrub it completely.
Which is wild. He wrote the original dense technical proposal in Chinese.
Right.
Then he fed that Chinese text into a massive AI model, Qin 2.5, and had it translate the document back into English.
A double-blind translation process, basically.
Yeah. And finally, he went through that English translation line by line, manually editing it to strip out any of his known linguistic quirks, favorite adjectives, or structural habits.
So what does this all mean?
Yeah, he took extreme multi-layered cross-lingual measures to scrub his digital fingerprint And yet, an AI researcher named Franklin Wang still managed to unmask Vitalik as the author.
Unbelievable.
And he did it in under 2 hours using AI analysis.
2 hours.
How is that even remotely possible if the vocabulary and the syntax were completely pulverized?
Well, this raises an important question about what advanced AI is actually reading when it processes a document.
Okay.
The AI that Franklin Wang deployed didn't care about Vitalik's vocabulary or his grammar or whether a sentence was passive or active.
What was it looking at then?
It looked entirely at his mathematical reasoning style.
His reasoning style. You mean the actual logic he used to solve the problem?
Exactly. When you solve a complex algorithmic problem, your brain takes a highly specific, idiosyncratic path to get from point A to point B.
Okay, I follow.
You might group certain variables together subconsciously, or you might skip a logical step, because to your brain, it's self-evident. Well, another engineer would spell it out over 3 paragraphs.
Wow.
Vitalik has a deeply ingrained, unique geometry to his mathematical thought process. The AI stripped away the English language entirely, looked at the raw skeleton of the logic, and said, "This specific cognitive pathway belongs to Vitalik Buterin."
That is deeply unsettling.
It really is.
Because if an AI can figure out who Vitalik is purely from the geometry of his math, what does it know about how we structure our daily emails? Or how we argue in a forum?
Or what steps we take to write a project proposal?
Exactly. We spent the last 20 years telling whistleblowers, journalists, and activists that if they use a VPN or the Tor network or end-to-end encryption, they can hide their identity.
But this implies that AI can now fingerprint how you think.
It fundamentally dismantles our current concept of anonymity.
You can spoof your IP address, you can bounce your connection across a dozen servers in different countries.
But you cannot easily rewire the cognitive pathways of your own brain.
Exactly. If an AI has enough historical data on your past writing, it can identify you. The encryption protects the data in transit, but it can't protect the ghost of the author hidden inside the logic.
That is wild. And, you know, analyzing all that cognitive geometry or running those massive corporate AI sandboxes, it takes a staggering amount of processing power.
It does.
And that massive requirement is having a cascading, very expensive effect on the actual hardware in our pockets, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We are seeing the physical cost of all this software complexity right now, specifically in the smartphone market.
Yeah. The newsletter highlights a highly credible leak from D-Labs regarding the upcoming Google Pixel 11, which is set to be announced on August 11th, 2026.
Right.
And the huge shift here is that Google is completely eliminating the 128-gigabyte storage option.
They're just dropping it.
Yeah. The base model Pixel 11 will now be 256 gigabytes, and it's going to start at 999 euros.
Which is steep.
And the Pro models will push up to 1 terabyte and feature Google's new Tensor G5 chip. But 1,000 euros just for the baseline phone? That feels like a massive price hike just to get your foot in the door.
It definitely stings the wallet. But from a manufacturing standpoint, it isn't necessarily a price hike for that specific tier.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the 256 gigabyte Pixel 10 was also 999 euros. What they're doing is aggressively raising the floor. They are chopping off the bottom rung of the ladder entirely.
But why force everyone up a rung? Like, why completely abandon the budget-conscious user who just wants a basic phone?
Because a 128-gigabyte premium smartphone in 2026 is essentially a brick out of the box.
Wow, a brick.
Pretty much. Mm. Between 4K video recording, massive mobile gaming textures, and most importantly, on-device AI models.
Ah, the AI models.
Yeah, to protect user privacy, companies are trying to process AI tasks locally on the phone's chip rather than sending data to the cloud.
Right.
But those local AI models generate and process incredibly heavy files. 128 gigabytes fills up in a matter of days.
So they just can't support the smaller size anymore.
Google is positioning the Pixel 11, heavily powered by that Tensor G5 chip, to go head-to-head with the iPhone 17 and the Galaxy S27. They simply cannot offer a premium AI experience on a device that is constantly throwing up storage full error messages.
So the hardware has to become more expensive just to keep up with the bloat of the software. And since the barrier to entry for just existing in the digital world is getting so high, people are getting far more aggressive about making their idle assets pay for it all.
Which is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. And that brings us to the final piece of the puzzle from Tech in Morning, Binance's new BTC Yield product.
Right. As the digital economy matures and becomes more expensive, we're seeing complex, traditional Wall Street financial instruments being adapted directly for cryptocurrency.
And BTC Yield is a prime example of this maturation.
It allows users to earn a yield on their Bitcoin without having to sell their underlying stack.
But there is no such thing as a free lunch in crypto. How does this actually generate yield out of thin air?
Well, it doesn't come out of thin air. It comes from a strategy known in traditional options trading as a covered call.
Okay, break that down for us.
Here is the mechanism Binance is using. You deposit your Bitcoin into Binance Earn. In return, they issue you BTCY tokens, which are essentially receipts proving your share in this specific strategy pool. Binance then takes your deposited Bitcoin, holds it as collateral, and sells call options against it to other speculative traders in the market.
Okay, and a call option is basically a contract.
Right.
A trader pays a fee right now for the right to buy that Bitcoin at a specific locked-in price at a specific time in the future.
Exactly. The speculative traders buying those options pay a premium for that privilege. Binance collects all those premiums and distributes them weekly to you and the other users who deposited their Bitcoin into the pool.
So if I'm getting weekly premiums deposited into my account, what am I giving up?
The catch.
Right. If Bitcoin suddenly skyrockets in a massive moonshot, my profits are capped by that locked-in contract price, right?
That is the ultimate trade-off with any covered call strategy.
Okay.
If the price of Bitcoin stays flat, chops around sideways, or only creeps up a little bit, you are in the perfect scenario. You keep your Bitcoin, and you just keep collecting that weekly premium.
So it's fantastic passive income in a boring market.
Exactly. But if Bitcoin suddenly shoots to the moon, Binance is legally obligated to sell your collateral Bitcoin at that previously agreed upon strike price to the trader who bought the option.
So I don't lose my initial investment, but I completely miss out on the explosive upside.
Precisely. It is a product designed for conservative, medium-term investors who believe the market is going to remain relatively stable.
It is absolutely not a product for someone expecting a massive, face-melting bull run.
Not at all.
It's just fascinating how the sheer complexity we see in server architecture and AI reasoning is perfectly mirroring the increasing complexity in how everyday users have to manage their digital finances.
It really is all connected.
Okay, let's take a step back and look at the massive journey we've been on today. We started by looking at a 16-year-old trapdoor hidden deep in the Linux kernel that could compromise the foundation of cloud computing.
And we saw how hackers are treating cybersecurity like a heist.
Yeah, using sophisticated social engineering and open source exploits to steal national security research right out from under physics professors.
Then we explored the terrifying reality of AI.
Both its structural vulnerabilities in shared corporate vaults and its staggering ability to strip away a genius like Vitalik Buterin's anonymity simply by reading the geometry of his mathematical logic.
Unbelievable.
And finally, we looked at how this technological arms race is driving up the baseline cost of our hardware, forcing users into complex financial derivatives like Bitcoin-covered calls just to generate yield.
It really highlights the dual nature of the progress we are making. We've seen today that AI can strip away your anonymity simply by analyzing the underlying logic of your arguments, while at the exact same time, the basic digital infrastructure holding all of our data has harbored invisible foundational flaws for over a decade and a half.
Yeah.
If the digital walls protecting our data are truly that porous, and the AI analyzing that data is becoming that omniscient, it forces us to ask a really tough question.
What's that?
Are we entering an era where the very concept of a private thought simply ceases to exist the moment it becomes digitized?
Wow. That is a chilling thought to leave on. Just like that skyscraper we talked about at the beginning, the shiny glass exterior of our digital world is beautiful, but it might just be time we start paying a lot more attention to the concrete pouring into the foundation. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the digital world around you, and we'll see you next time.